This is Inside the Hall.
Double tight end, Francis right wing. The give comes to Cunningham. He hurdles up and in. Touchdown! They're banned. Schaefer Stadium explodes.
Inside the Hall. A look inside the pass.
Back to pass, looking for Francis. Nobody there. Now he shoots over the middle. He's open. Touchdown! Darryl Stingley!
Present.
He's going to go the distance. 20, 15, 10, 5, Lawrence Maroney.
And future of the New England Patriots.
With the 18th pick in the first round, the New England Patriots select.
Now, Inside the Hall with Brian Morey and NFL Hall of Famer Andre Tippett.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to Inside the Hall. Andre Tippett is here after a one-week hiatus. Celebrate a holiday. I'm Brian Morey, web radio at Patriots.com. If you want to send your emails to Andre Tippett, Pro Football Hall of Famer, Patriots Hall of Famer. And Tip, before you came down, I was doing the crossover with John Rook and, you know, talked a little bit about Lawrence Maroney, and that's where I'd like to start today. And if you go inside the hall, by the way, there is a vertical leap exhibit where you can test your vertical to Lawrence Maroney's. Just had to get the plug in before I talk about the Patriots running back. A lot of hubbub, I guess I'll call it, this week about Maroney and his decision to step out of bounds on a play in last week's game against San Francisco, 1 yard short of the first down marker. Not something I've seen from Maroney in the past, typically. I'm curious to know if you think he might be running with a lack of confidence, nursing an injury. And I have a second question. I'll let you answer those and try to ask you the second one.
Well, you know, you can never get into another player's mind. I mean, you can always make your judgment about what you think and what you perceive something to be. But I'll put it like this. I can remember Raymond Berry in practices during training camp or preparing for things during the week, and I would always hear him say to the receivers and running backs, "Know when your journey is over." Now, with that being said, you know, we do different things. We see things differently than most people. I mean, what you're going to see while you're sitting back with a monitor in front of you, you're going to perceive it to be one thing. But when you're in the heat of things, you're in the battle of a game, it could be totally different than what you're going to see. So, I don't know, but I just assume that at some point all running backs, they know when they can go to extra yard and, you know, when they need to tough it out. And, you know, he's still a young running back. He's still developing his mentality for the game and how to play the game. And, you know, I still think he's a tough running back.
And the only reason I ask you is because I don't think that's typical of him. You know, his durability has been questioned because he's gotten nicked up in each of his three seasons here. But I think, you know, we saw what I think Lawrence Maroney can be at the end of last season, which is a big-time back. I mean, mm-hmm. He was a good, strong, explosive runner at the end of last season, you know, down the stretch into the playoffs. And I thought that was finally, okay, now we're getting a real look at this guy. He must be healthy. He's running hard. He certainly can be a home run guy.
Right.
He's shown the ability to explode. So it was just – it was atypical of what I think I've seen from him. And as I said to John Rook, we've heard about the drills they did at Minnesota when they never ran out of bounds.
Right.
So it's not like this guy came up with some kind of mentality to step out.
Right.
That's why it was alarming to me. And as a viewer, I don't usually react – to that type of stuff,
right?
You know, because I'm not there, as you say, I'm not
right,
in the heat of the
right,
battle.
Right.
But it was like, why did he do that? It was just shocking. That's all.
Well, you know, like I said, you know, it could be a lot of things. It could be all of those things that you said. That you know, it could be you know a certain area of his body that has been nicked up from preseason. And you know, thing about football, you get injured. You usually play, and probably 99% of the players playing are injured,
mm-hmm.
and have some type of injury that bothers them, and will continue to bother them until the season is over with. So, yeah, I mean, he probably at that point, you know, hey, do I need to take this extra hit? No, let me step out, or you know.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you this then: as a defender, as a linebacker, Hall of Fame linebacker. forget Lawrence Maroney, but it's inevitable that that's what we're talking about. But when a guy does that, you just said you don't try to get in players' heads. Certainly when you're on the field,
right,
you're trying to get in players' heads.
Absolutely.
When a guy does that, do you feel like you have a mental edge on him after that?
Sure. I mean, you'll test him. I mean, you know, right away you see something like that, and then at some point he's going to be asked to block. And if I'm rushing, I'm going to challenge him from that standpoint to see how he holds up. And I did that, you know, throughout my career. I'm going to find out if a running back wants to block for the quarterback, or if the tight end wants to block, or whoever wants to block. And so – yeah, I definitely will find out, you know, what he's willing and what not willing to do.
How much would you be talking to a guy who maybe did that, like during the game? Would you try to get in his head verbally?
I'd probably whisper a few things to him just to see
such as
reaction. Yeah, you know, hey, you know, you look like you didn't want to sit in there on that particular block. You okay? You know, and they'll look at you and laugh, or pat you on the back, or you know, hey, I'm coming again. You know, I would whisper something like that and see what the reaction is. But, yeah, you're going to test them. You keep testing.
Now, that said, Matt Cassel rebounded from a tough performance against the Miami Dolphins.
Yes, he did.
You know, overcame an early interception that he was hit while he was trying to throw the ball downfield, and really managed the game well and put some points on the board. What do you think overall of his performance?
I thought it was a great confidence booster for him. Not that he needs his confidence boosted at this particular time, because he is a very confident quarterback. He's a very capable quarterback. And it was nice to see him hook up with who probably will become his bread and butter for the remainder of the season. And, you know, they finally, you know, they're gelling, and you know, just the confidence to get back on those winning ways and doing the things that quarterback needs to do in order to lead the team. So I thought his performance was good. And, you know, in most football players will tell you that, you know, hey, there's always room for improvement. So I'm assuming that he knows that he can get better, you know, and there are probably half a different opportunities that he probably missed that we'll never know about, but he knows that he missed. So he's going to be looking to make up for those missed opportunities and do some things out there.
You're listening to Inside the Hall with Pro Football Hall of Famer Andre Tippett, web radio at patriots.com. The email address, if you'd like to fire off a question to Andre. Tip, when you have a young quarterback like that, you mentioned that he is a confident guy, but clearly, you know, that has to come with success. Ultimately, you can be confident, but once you get out there, you have to perform, or it would be easy for that to wane. You have a guy like Randy Moss, who in his past has been an enigma at times on teams that maybe didn't have the type of quarterback that he felt could make the most of his ability. Clearly, last year he excelled with Tom Brady.
Right.
There was a story in the Boston Globe today about him, about Matt Cassel seeking him out, sitting him down, having a chat with him. The two talked, watched some film together. I'm curious to know, when you have a guy like that, and you called him the guy who will be his bread and butter, is it hard to not force the ball to him? And maybe the example that people could point to would be in New York with the Giants when Jeremy Shockey was there and constantly calling for the ball. And some people believe that that actually stunted Manning's development, because he was trying to shut this guy up and satisfy this guy who was the great tight end.
Right.
Everybody knows how talented Randy Moss is. Do you have to be careful about – do you have to manage that situation about forcing the ball to him and at the same time going through your progressions and having him run down the field waving his arm and getting frustrated?
I think you got to do that with all receivers. All receivers are like that.
I was wide open.
Different. Yeah, everybody was open. I think it's just part of the building of the team. You know, because each year you're building on something, and it just so happened that, okay, now Matt is a quarterback, so he has to build his relationship with Randy. And what are you going to do? You're going to obviously sit down, have a conversation, watch some tape. Let's find out what we're thinking about. Let's find out what you're thinking about, Randy. Let's find out what you're thinking about, Matt. And we're going to make sure that we're on the same page, because no matter what, in all of your success, any football team will always revert back to 11 on defense, 11 on offense, 11 on special teams, all being on the same page, and you can't have one without the other. And I think that's that was some smart move on Castle's part to say, hey, look, let's sit down and talk. Let's go watch some tape together. Let's spend some time together. Because football is about building relationships. It really, truly is about I have to know you. I have to respect you. I have to know you. I work with you. I practice with you. At some point, I break bread with you because, you know, you have to have that relationship. I had those relationships with my defensive players when I was playing. We all hung together. We did a lot of things together. And, you know, you build that confidence. You know that crunch time that I can depend on you and you're going to be that guy that's going to be around. So you need that. You need that. And that's just all that is just building relationships with your players.
And with a guy like Matt Castle, who hadn't started a game since high school before starting week two against, who did we play week two? The Jets.
Jets.
You know, do you feel like, how much do teammates maybe wonder? Like, you know, one of the things with Tom Brady, and I don't want to compare them, and I'm not trying to compare them, and I think it's ridiculous, but in 2001, Brady got a lot of reps with the first offense during the preseason and played well. And it's funny, Pete Brock, and it's in the video, the signature film, at the Hall, when Tom Brady comes into that game against the Jets, his first NFL, real NFL appearance as the backup quarterback. He might have had some garbage time as a rookie or something like that. But Pete Brock was doing the game with Gil Santos on the radio, and he said, well, Tom Brady showed a lot of poise in the preseason. Let's see how it carries over to the regular season.
Right.
Well, we all know how it carried over. And I think there was a sense there that when Tom Brady stepped into the huddle, people sort of already had a basis to have some belief in this guy. You think they had that with Matt? I mean, he certainly didn't play that well in the preseason. So you think they had that? Or maybe does a game like Sunday's help that?
Well, obviously, the game like Sunday really helps his cause and shows what he's capable of. Who knows what anybody thinks about doing the preseason? Because, you know, I know since Bill's been here, watching preseason, it's really about developing, getting the opportunity to go out and perform and do some things and watch players and to evaluate. I mean, you use preseason to evaluate your team. And I think everyone from, you know, in the coaching staff have always known what he's capable of. And I think that, you know, it is what it is that he got an opportunity to do some things. And he, you know, it is what it was.
What do you think the toughest thing is? Because you're seeing him get sacked a lot.
Right.
Whereas Tom Brady, I think, I could look it up, but he probably got sacked less than 20 times last year.
Right.
I don't happen to think, and I'm not by any means an offensive line expert, he got sacked 21 times. I'm certainly not an expert on offensive line play, but I would tend to put a lot of this on the quarterback as opposed to the line, and I don't mean that as a slight against Matt Castle,
right,
as much as I mean it as a compliment for Tom Brady, who identifies things,
right,
knows what's coming, gets the ball out quickly when he has to, and all of that. Whereas Matt Castle, you know, people forget that Tom Brady, his first year playing in 2001, got sacked 45 times in 14 games.
Right.
So he wasn't recognizing.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, yeah, it takes time to see all that stuff.
Hey, the pro game now, it, I don't care who you are, it takes a while to learn. Now, being a backup is different. I mean, because you know you don't have that opportunity. I mean, you know, let's face it. I mean, you have to play. The only way you're going to get better is by playing. Now, practicing is one thing, but being in the game, you really get a chance to see it live and
fast.
And it's going to be fast. And I think Matt's smart enough to realize that. You know, the more he sees, the more he's going to get better, the more he's going to be able to recognize and read and react. And that's all it is just read and react and seeing it. And I think he's constantly being reminded about things to look for. And that's what we all do. I mean, that's all part of practice and the development in the preparation is, if you see this, react to that. If you do this, do that. And I think, you know, we're still, what, five game, going into our fifth game of the season? You know, he's got a long season ahead of him. I guarantee you, by the end of the year, we won't see this. I mean, we'll see a better, sharper, doing things a lot differently than he did in the first five games.
And one of the things, as far as the sacks go, is I think it's tough for people to realize that maybe sometimes he's making the right play by taking the sack, even though it's frustrating and you don't like it, and you know, now we got a punt. It's a situation where you, as Bill Parcells used to say, you know, you save the opportunity to punt,
right,
as opposed to throwing the ball to the other team because you're trying to be a hero.
Right.
So sometimes taking the sack is the better play and maybe avoids a much more negative play.
Right.
So, I mean, I do think there's some of that because, I mean, I'm sure that recognizing things, and as a defensive player, you know, when you had a new quarterback come in, a young guy or an inexperienced guy or a backup in a specific game, I'm sure you knocked out your share of quarterbacks. I mean, did you immediately say, okay, now we got to come after him. We got to show him some different things. We got to try to confuse this guy because he hasn't seen it.
Absolutely, we did. Whenever we knew there was a new quarterback in there, we definitely gave him some different looks, rotated the backfield, and just, you know, we tried to do everything that we could to confuse that player. And it worked a lot. And then there were times where, you know, we thought it was going to work and it didn't work. So, but yeah, you look to confuse and to throw them off of their game, especially when players coming in, you know, cold. You want to confuse them.
You see a lot of moving around on defenses nowadays. You know, guys jumping in and out of certain spots, sliding over, doing whatever before the snap. Obviously trying to create some confusion with the pre-snap read.
Right.
Is the key to disguising the post-snap movement?
Absolutely.
I mean, so when I look out, I see cover two.
Right.
It really could be cover four.
Right.
What's the best way to go about disguising that? Like just dropping guys? I mean, I don't know.
Well, it changes from week to week. I mean, there have been times when, you know, coach told us, hey, line up in it. Show them right away. Show them. Or I know that we've been drilled, say, in red area, in the red zone area. We've been drilled, like, do not move. Don't show it. Don't show it. You know, and you'd see guys getting cussed out because, you know, they were jumping or flinching or moving out too soon. It's like, no, you got to hold that. Save that until the snap. Move at the snap of the ball. And because, you know, as the quarterback comes up, he gets that read. He sees it. He says, oh, okay, yeah, it's going to be a cover two. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere comes this inside linebacker that's rolling up under the wide receiver who's running a in route, getting ready to get hit, and all of a sudden, bam, we take that thing away, we get an interception, or we pop it up in the air. So, yeah, the key to it is, you know, you move when you're told to move, and sometimes you hold off and you wait until the snap. It'll vary. It varies from week to week. Quarterback to quarterback. Some quarterbacks are good at seeing it. Some are not.
When defensive players have their own quarterback go down, do they feel some sense of responsibility to do more? And do you have to do more, or do you have to resist the temptation to do more?
Both. Sometimes, you know, you look at, you know, if you listen back when Brady got hurt. You listen to some of the defensive players. Now we have to step up because it's more than just Brady on the football team. So, yeah, guys take it upon themselves that, hey, look, you know, we got a pretty good quarterback. Actually, we got a great quarterback. But you know what? We got a pretty good defense, too. So now it's time for us to probably raise our level of play. And in that, you have to be careful because, again, you tend to try to do too much, and by doing that, you break down your defense, and you cause some things that you normally wouldn't have caused because you're forcing the issue. And so, yeah, quarterback goes down, defensive guys take it on their back to, you know what, we're going to will our soul in this game. We're gonna will this win, you know. And so, it happens.
Now, I thought that last year, the Patriots defense was okay, nothing special. I thought it benefited a lot from the production of the offense, keeping it out of a lot of bad situations and pressure situations. But that said, I don't know what the calls were. I don't, you know, I'm sure that the efficiency and production of the offense certainly had an impact on the way they played defense, the way they called defenses. You know, we don't need to take chances. We're going to score. We're just going to sit back here and play our cover two and do whatever. Does, when a situation like this comes up, does it require more scheming on behalf of the coaches too?
Again, last year was one thing. This year, you know, we've improved in some areas that may have been our weaknesses last year. But again, it varies from year to year, player to player. You know, it all depends on the area that you want to work to improve and get better at. You know, who knows?
Have you had a chance to watch Jerod Mayo?
I have.
What do you think?
I think that he is a talented football player who is still learning.
Of course.
You know, people are game planning for him because he does a lot of things well. He got good read and react. He can burst to the ball. He's a good tackler. And now people realize that, you know what, we got a game plan for him. We got to give him some things that he's not used to. He's a rookie. You know, he hasn't been in this league but a few months. So let's try to take advantage of him every chance that we get. So with that being said, that just means that he's going to have to work hard, and he's going to have to show that, one, when you get game plan, it has a way of working on your mind. It you know, you're not used to doing your things. I mean, there have been games where I got no pressure on the quarterback because I got a tight end, wing back, fullback chipping on me. Or I got a tight end tackle working me over. Or I got a tight end and a halfback working me over. So it didn't just happen by chance. It's like we refuse to let this guy cause havoc on our quarterback.
Sure.
So what you have to do is realize that, hey, you know what? I got game plan in this game, and I didn't have any effectiveness in the game, but I played decent. I played against the run. I affected the pass situations that I was involved in. Next week, I got to show that I can overcome those things now, because if you don't, we are a copycat league, mm-hmm. and they will continue to do the same things. People going to watch tape. They say, hey, the Jets did this against Tippett last week. The Jet, Miami did this the week before, and it worked. So let's see if we can try it again. So until you show that you can overcome that, they'll keep doing it. And you just got to be mentally strong and not, as they used to say, get your dapper down. You got to you got to fight through it and play hard. But I think he's going to be a good football player in this league. I think that he's gonna after it's all said and done, he'll leave a mark.
Well, I look at him and I kind of have a feeling that Bill Belichick would rather not be playing rookies at that position if he could help it.
Right.
But I wonder how hard or how difficult it is for a guy to come in as a rookie and step into a 3-4, two-gap defense inside. I'm not sure if he's ever played in a two-gap before, where, you know, obviously you're not operating in space, where you're taking on guards at times. You know, they've been kind of shading Vince a little bit more than I've seen in the past. I don't know if they're playing a little more gap control, one gap, penetration type defense. But, you know, it's, as Ted Johnson used to say, it's a tough, stout defense when you play in this defense. And does that make it that much harder as opposed to playing behind two big fat guys who are occupying the guards in the center and you just roam?
Yeah, of course. Obviously, you know, and any player will tell you, man, I wish, you know, I had the ability to do that. But when you play a 3-4 defense, it calls for you to be a very physical inside linebacker. You have to be conscious of the fullback and the guards and the trap blocks at all times. And, you know, obviously he can do it because he's starting and he's playing. Right. So, but I think, you know, if you see it enough, You play it enough, you get used to playing it. It's not hard, but it's demanding. It is. It will tell you what type of player you're going to be. Are you going to be a physical player, or are you going to be a finesse player? And in our defense, there's no room for finesse. So he definitely will become, when his career is over, he's going to be a very physical football player.
Now, you played, did you play in a 3-4 for most of your career?
I played 3-4 pretty much all my career till McPherson, those guys came in. We played a little bit of 4-3, another version of 3-4, but it was pretty much a 3-4 defense.
So on the line of scrimmage most of the time for you.
Yeah.
Obviously a lot different being on the edge, although you had to, we like to point out when the Andre Tippett, Lawrence Taylor comparison is made that you played on the tight end side and he was just beating tackles off the edge.
Baby,
big,
I
beating
my
the
money.
Fat guys.
I earned my money the hard way. I earned it. You know, strong side, weak side. I mean, the funny thing about it is, you know, it you don't pick it, it picks you. I was always a strong side player my whole high school, college, pro career. So that's the way I played. They put me over there a couple of times, and I looked lost. I was lost because it was just like it was new to me. I didn't have anybody to beat up on and get physical with. It was like, okay, now go get the quarterback.
How much do you think, obviously Lawrence Taylor's greatness is what it is. He's in Canton, Ohio, along with you, as one of the greatest linebackers of all time. But I'm curious to know what you think about how that left tackle position has changed. And I read a book about, it's called The Blind Side, Evolution of the Left Tackle Position, essentially, and talked about how the 49ers one time got single-handedly eliminated from the playoffs by Chris Dolman because he just beat the left tackle so badly that Joe Montana was waiting to get hit. And that before they played LT, the guy couldn't sleep. He didn't sleep all night because LT was coming in, and he knew
Absolutely.
He couldn't block him.
Yeah.
Have left tackles changed quite a bit to become much more athletic since the Bill Walsh offense and the passing offense became in vogue?
Absolutely. All you got to do is look around the league at all the left tackles that have come in. If I don't know all the names off the top of my head, but you look at a guy like Bruce Armstrong, look at a guy like Anthony Munoz.
Used to be a tight end, Bruce Armstrong.
Yeah, the kid that played for the Ravens.
I know him.
Big left tackle.
That's his name.
But, yeah, every time – that's
Ogden,
why
Jonathan Ogden.
Jonathan Ogden. I mean, all of these guys, when they came available in the draft and the team, you could tell. Look at the kid from Michigan who's in Miami now, Long.
Yeah.
You want a big, agile, physical person that will put it on you. If you watch that kid Long from Miami when they played us, he was putting on a clinic out there. At some of the things that he was able to do, he was a pretty physical guy. And I saw something that Bill Walsh put out probably back in 2001, probably 2002. And it was the necessities for a football team. And one was a cornerback. One was having a quarterback who could run the offense and was agile and finesse and had an arm. The other one was a left tackle. And there were about five or six different things. I have the paper in my office that I've kept, and I've used it as part of my talks whenever I'm out talking about football to people. And it is one of the necessities to have a good football team is to have your left tackle. You have to be able to protect the quarterback's blind side. If you don't, you're going to have what Bill Walsh had the year that he got eliminated from the playoffs.
Yeah, and my next question is, as great as LT was, do you think he would have exactly the same type of impact with the evolution of that left tackle position? Because the guys that played left tackle might back then might be right tackles now.
Right. I still say that LT would have probably had the success. Yeah, he was a phenomenal football player.
Good political answer.
Yeah, it was.
He would have stunk.
It wouldn't have been so easy for him, but he would have, still had to do some things. I mean, he played on a great defense. When you look at the great defensive linemen that he had and the Carl Banks and the Reasons and the different guys that played inside linebacker with him. So, he was surrounded by great guys.
Carson.
Carson and,
and then later Pepper.
Pepper Johnson. And, he would have still had some success, had a lot of success.
Now, when you look at the Patriots defense up front, and just you mentioned the defensive lineman, it was Jim Burt, it was Leonard Marshall. Now, obviously, the size of players has changed quite a bit. I mean, Jim Burt was their nose tackle and probably weighs half as much as Vince Wilfork weighs now. But do you believe that even though you have to have great linebackers to play that defense, that it all starts with the nose tackle?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially when you're playing, they played the 3-4, we played the 3-4. In order to have a success with the 3-4, you got to have a nose guard who can hunker down in there, anchor, and play consistently, a full season. And then you got to have the defensive ends who can play. But you got to have a strong nose tackle who can clog the middle, because if you don't, you're just going to put added pressure on the inside backers. So, nose tackle is definitely key to a strong 3-4 defense.
Besides yourself and maybe LT, who was the best pass rusher you ever saw or played against? I mean, I know you weren't playing against him mano a mano, but
right,
that you watched play. Or is there anyone you emulated or studied?
Well, I mean, guys that I played against, over the years, you look at the Bruce Smiths, who a guy could just flat out bring it when he wanted to. Ricky Jackson, he consistently got after. Chris Dolman, he phenomenal pass rusher. Richard Dent, those guys can get after you pretty good. Coming into the league and playing college football, watching the guys that were already in the league, you talk about your LC Greenwoods, your Deacon Jones. You learn a lot from those guys. Some of the technique that they used back then, by the time I got to the league, was a little bit illegal, the helmet slaps and stuff like that. But at that point, for their era, they were very effective. There's a list of guys. Claude Humphrey.
Reggie White.
Reggie White. He was another guy that when he willed his presence on you when he wanted to. So there's so many guys that, for me, I learned just by watching. I watched, and I was able to emulate that particular move. If it was, say, the swim or the club, or the Reggie White had this great hump move. He gets you going one way and then club you across your body. And,
we won't talk about that.
Yeah, well, the key to it was getting the guy upfield as fast as you could. And you had to be an athlete to pull that move mm-hmm. off. And Reggie White was a phenomenal athlete. But speed rush, all that stuff is all technique, getting off the ball. Your key to it is you watch the ball. And the minute that thing moves, bam, you're gone. And what you want to do is you want to create that junction point. You want to get that offensive tackle to have to move his feet and get out and come chase you. And then you got a variety of moves. You can continue under, club back, bull rush. All of that stuff I saw, I learned, and I made it part of my repertoire. So, there's so many phenomenal guys that have rushed the quarterback.
Send your emails to webradio@patriots.com. This is Inside the Hall with Andre Tippett. Back with more right after this.
What do I love at Qdoba Mexican Grill?
I love this Qdoba catering.
If you've got a group of folks to feed, Qdoba catering is totally the way to go.
You've got the hot taco bar.
The hot nacho bar.
The hot naked burrito bar.
Did I mention that they're hot?
I make the phone call and they take care of everything.
People come and they
just help themselves.
They come with everything you'd need to feed a group of hungry people.
Marinated grilled chicken and beef, three kinds of salsa,
fresh lettuce,
guacamole,
cookies and
brownies,
homemade tortilla chips,
everything.
But we get Qdoba Catering for all kinds of different occasions.
Tailgate parties,
soccer games,
birthday parties,
baby shower for my son's graduation party. It's perfect for office meetings.
You open the door to the conference room, you get the smell of Qdoba.
Hot bars are totally unique.
It's incredible. People love it. It's fresh,
affordable.
That's the easy way to plan a party.
That's what I love about Qdoba Mexican Grill.
That's what I love about Qdoba Catering.
Have a group to feed? Order a hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering and give them food they'll never forget. What are you going to love at Qdoba?
Big games mean big parties. Feed 20 or more of your friends with a Qdoba hot taco, nacho, or naked burrito bar from Qdoba Catering. It's fast, fresh, and budget-friendly. Now with 16 Massachusetts locations, opening September at Patriot Place in Kenmore Square. Full menu available at Qdoba.com.
Patriot Place, New England's first and only super regional lifestyle and entertainment center, is now open right next to Gillette Stadium in Foxborough, Massachusetts. The home of the New England Patriots and the New England Revolution is now the home of New England's most exciting entertainment and shopping destination, featuring Circuit City, Bed Bath & Beyond, Christmas tree shops, Off-Broadway shoes, Staples, and New England's first Bass Pro Shops. Patriot Place has something for your shopping needs. And coming soon to Patriot Place is the first CBS Scene restaurant in Boston. A four-star hotel, showcase live entertainment venue, and the long-awaited hall at Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon. Patriot Place will soon be the home to more than 70 shopping, entertainment, and dining experiences unlike any other in New England. Visit patriot-place.com for more information and enter the grand opening sweepstakes for the opportunity to win a $10,000 Visa gift card for a Patriot Place shopping spree. A once-in-a-lifetime experience every day. At Patriot Place, everyone wins.
Well, it's that time of year again where Sunday means you're doing something football. Whether it's tailgating in the parking lot, throwing the pigskin around, or just hanging in and watching the game on the tube, it's all about football. And when you're not watching football or playing football, well, I think we both know you're thinking football. And all that can make you a little hungry. That's why there's the tasty snack wrap from McDonald's. Snack wraps now come in your choice of three flavors. New Chipotle barbecue, honey mustard, and ranch. And they're available with grilled or crispy chicken. Delicious and easy to eat. It's the perfect game time snack. So grab one today. And when you do, if you're looking at that chicken select and it kind of reminds you of a quarterback in the middle of the pocket, except now he's surrounded by cheddar jack cheese, ranch sauce, and lettuce, well, maybe you're thinking just a little too much about football. McDonald's. I'm loving it.
Welcome back to Inside the Hall with Pro Football Hall of Famer Andre Tippett. I'm Brian Morey. Web radio at patriots.com is the email address. And speaking of Inside the Hall, our beloved producer here, Gary Gradecki, took voice guy Rob Shula. Shula or Shuler? I can't hear you. Still can't hear you.
Shuler.
Shuler.
Shuler. Who's Shuler?
He's the guy who does the voices here.
Okay. Welcome to Inside the Hall.
Okay, I knew that.
He also does some voice work inside the hall. In the Building Blocks exhibit, he did all the voiceover work for the
day
video. In the
And mornings are always tough to get through.
There he is.
So stop by your local Dunkin' Donuts today.
So, Gary, what did you think today? You went through the hall, first time through the whole thing, really, with some time?
Well, the induction weekend, I kind of went through the whole thing, but I gave Rob the tour today. It's great.
What'd you like best? What can you tease our listeners about?
Well,
you
have to see the movie.
Of course.
You have to see the movie.
Because of your recommendation of putting Brett Favre in it.
Absolutely.
To feel the pain a little
and
more.
And Tip from the Super Bowl in 85 and how disappointed he was looking up at that scoreboard.
Oh, man.
He did ask to put that in. You got to put those guys in.
Yeah.
He said those guys when they were on the sideline just looking down. That was Gary. Gary recommended that.
Thanks, Gary.
It was memorable. It elicited, you know, emotions.
I do think the point of that stuff, and I agree with you, obviously about like getting Favre in, is to feel the pain. Feel that pain so because you're building up to that championship season. And so if you feel the pain during the film, it elicits that much more emotion when you finally see the confetti falling. And then you actually get to see some confetti falling a little bit.
Sort of.
A little bit of confetti.
The interactive stuff is amazing at how quick, you know, the building blocks areas when you just as soon as you hit the touch screen, they're giving you all this information and the digital pylons with all the Hall of Famers and stuff. It's great.
What didn't you like? The answer here would be nothing, but go ahead.
Well, I'm struggling to think of anything.
Good,
I didn't
good.
Like.
That's good. No, I'm only kidding. Is there anything
the,
really?
The fact that I had to call you to get in for free, I didn't like that.
What? They let you in for free?
No, I had to call you.
Yeah, I told them to charge you.
Wow.
No, I'm just kidding. Nah,
you know, I've been bringing the Coach of the Week winners into the Hall of Fame, and they are just blown away by the whole experience. And I've been making sure that they get back to their high schools and let the players in the school know about what we've done here. It's pretty impressive, and I told make sure you go up on the third floor and see the area that's dedicated to you. So to give them an incentive.
Sure, absolutely. And we've had some football teams come in and tour the hall, and I took them out for a field visit. Scituate High School was in. I believe Pembroke High School was in. I think Abington is coming in later this week or next week as well. And, you know, I keep asking, you guys going to play here this year? You know,
are you going to? Yeah, get them charged up.
Because that's I remember as a high school player in Rhode Island, a baseball player, thinking, oh, man, imagine if we made it to McCoy Stadium. And, you know, I was fortunate enough to do that. But, I mean, you know, you come into Gillette Stadium and now that has, I mean, I like that we are in many ways, now that we host the Eastern Massachusetts Super Bowls, you know, that we're sort of becoming a mecca of football in New England.
Absolutely. It, you know, it gives the kids something to shoot about. I mean, and we all, just like you said, you know, how you wish someday to be able to play in McCoy. Well, growing up in Jersey, I had no clue about the ability to play at the Meadowlands, and I got a chance to play at the Meadowlands twice. My senior year state championship and then the All-Star game at the Meadowlands, and I thought that was the coolest thing in the world. We also got a chance to put on the Giants' rain shoes because it was raining that day. None of us had turf shoes. I mean, we were, you know, kids from Newark, so, you know, we had sneakers, and they're like, no, you're going to need turf shoes. So that whole ambiance was unbelievable for us. And I've talked to a lot of kids that played here last year in the Super Bowl, and they just could not say enough about what is happening and what's taking place and them having the opportunity to do that. We brought Pop Warner here.
Mm-hmm.
These kids were, they still talk about it. Here it is almost a month, 2 months since that event took place where we had Play Football Month here. And we had the Sharon Pop Warner team here. And they, for the 8 minutes that they were on the football field, they all lived their dream. And, I mean, they're 10-year-old kids.
Sure.
But they had an unbelievable time. And the parents were so happy that their kids got a chance to play football where their heroes play the
game.
Yeah.
Now, and we, out of the hall, have done a lot with field trips. And we had all the third grades from Foxborough in last week and all the fourth grades in this week. And at the end, you know, the kids don't know that we're taking them on the field, and we get them out on the field, and I give them a few little quick facts about the field, how many seats, how much it costs to build, yada, 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 as compared to the old stadium. And then they get to, we line them up on, you know, in front of sort of the lighthouse bridge area and take a nice group shot of them. And, and the kids are leaving. They're like, this is the best field trip ever. And I'm like, what do you mean? This is better than the Museum of Science? And they're like, way better.
Oh, yeah. It's great. And I'm telling you, I know these players. They go up on the third floor and they see all those past Super Bowl champions from last year and see the jerseys up there. And they're like, man, I said, you know, we have an opportunity to do that and be part of that exhibit. So they're fired up. They're going back home trying to figure out, hey, we got to play harder.
Oh, believe me, my education coordinator, Paul Carroll, is talking a lot of trash these days as he's an assistant coach at BC High, who I believe is ranked number one
5-0
in Mass and has a huge, huge game this Friday night against the Crimson Tide of Everett,
the
defending champs.
They're looking forward to that. That should be a good game. I might even go to that game.
And that's up at BC High, right?
Yeah.
And so that could be I don't know if it will be a Super Bowl preview, but certainly a battle for the top spot in the state, although Everett just got it handed to them by St. John's Prep, right?
Yeah, they did.
Unusual.
Unusual for them. They are a team that have just, all they know is winning. Some young boys have played through the program for so many years, and all they know is Super
Bowls. It's amazing that a public school can turn them out that way.
Well, you know, all it takes is, you know, one or two good years, and then it just starts to escalate.
They must have a great Pop Warner program.
Oh, yeah. The program is good. And, you know, they got players. Players that want to play there. They don't want to go anywhere else. They want to have that opportunity to play at Everett. And
Put some guys in the league.
You know, and it's you got a lot of kids have gone to D1 schools from that program. So it's a lot like what we do here. People say, how do you guys continue to get players to come here and willing to take less to be here? Well, it started in 2001. Wait. You know, all of that and the way the players came out and were introduced, all right. of that stuff has paid big dividends for the New England Patriots organization, and it'll continue to do that.
And I think, you know, when you look at Everett, the only years, Andre, and I'm not sure you know this, the only years of late in the modern era that they struggled and finished with losing seasons was the years that Paul Perillo was on the Everett roster. Did you know that?
Wow, no, no kidding.
I don't know anything.
He didn't tell me that. I'm gonna have to talk to him about that. That's a shame.
If we could look up, he graduated, I believe, Everett High in 1986, and I'm guessing they had it's probably the only 4-year period in the history of the program where they had a losing record.
Wow.
Now Andy Hart, on the other hand, was dominating at Dartmouth.
Was he?
And you know, going on to. Exciting college career at Tufts.
They were paying kids to go to Dartmouth, though, wasn't they? Wasn't they recruiting kids
Probably.
To come in there?
Probably. But he was a little fat kid when he was young. He wasn't like this. He wasn't the steroid diesel guy he is now.
I heard they were a little shady during his years, too. So
Probably.
We're going to have to check in there. We're going to have to investigate.
Probably. And then he went off to Tufts, alma mater of one Dan Kraft. I think we got to get a Tufts-Williams game at Gillette. Dan Kraft versus Jonathan Kraft.
Yeah, absolutely. They're playing... next week, aren't they?
They both. What's that league called? Mescac or whatever it is with Tufts and Williams and Colby Bates and Bowden. And
believe it or not, my position coach from college, his grandson is playing. He's a quarterback up at Williams, so he's going to be coming in next week to see that game. So I may get recruited to go with him to go watch that game. So
you got to push the owner to host a game like that here.
We should.
I think we could do, you know what we could do? We make a day out of it, and maybe we do it Hall of Fame weekend where we take two of our teams that have jerseys on the wall. Maybe it's an interstate game. Yeah. So maybe it's one of the champions from Connecticut against the champion from New Hampshire, and you bring them in for a game, followed by a Williams Tufts type college game. Because let's face it, we're not getting a BC game here. They're not giving up the gate. But,
no.
You know,
that
and
would
then,
be interesting. I know that there would be a huge, huge following. And I think we know some people that went to Williams and Tufts, so I think that it'd be interesting that we look into that.
I think it would be a great idea, and you can make that happen. See, I can't. You get the owner's ear. I can't. You're Andre Tippett. I can't make that happen. But you know, I'm putting a little pressure on you. If that happens, I'll give you full credit.
I'm gonna have to put together a proposal.
I've mentioned it to Dan, but that's as far as I've gotten. Because he happens to walk by the office now and then.
Nope.
So
we are all patriots.
That's right.
Yeah, but some of us are bigger patriots than others, you know. They have more accessibility to the executive suite.
Wow.
So, all right, Gary, that's going to do it for us here. We're going to wrap it up. It's Inside the Hall. Andre Tippett, we're here every Tuesday from 4 to 5. Come join us next week. We got Pete Brock next week. Going to join us? Maybe Pete Brock will join us a little bit, a little guest on Inside the Hall.
Sounds good.
For Andre Tippett, I'm Brian Morey. Back next Tuesday at 4. Thanks.
What you